Good morning, you guys, and happy, happy Sunday. So I got out of my rhythm last night, 6:30, I get this text from Kirk saying, I'm not feeling very good, not sure if I'm going to be there tomorrow, I plan on being there, and I already had my night planned, right? I was going to just relax after supper. We've been doing these family game nights throughout the week. We have three family game nights, and last night was Colton's family game night, and so that was scheduled to start at 7:30. And then after family game night on Saturday nights, that's when I plan my Sunday school lesson for Sunday. And then I sit on the couch with my bride for a little bit and go to sleep. And, you know, I get this text and I'm like, I'm just going to believe that it'll be all right. So we did family game night, put Maddie and Colton to bed, prayed with them. We prayed for Kirk that he'd be better today. I went downstairs, wrote my Sunday school lesson like Kirk was going to be here today, healthy and well. And then went to bed and got a text at 4:30 this morning saying, I ain't going to be there today. And I went, go back to bed, Stephen. And I did. And I woke up at my alarm at 6:25. And my rhythm is always I hit the snooze for 5 minutes. And from 6:25 to 6:30, I always just start with praising God and stuff like that. And when my alarm went off at 6:25, I had this shock run through my body like, oh my goodness, you've got to come up with a sermon, Stephen, and you need to come up with it now. And so I jumped out of bed and I grabbed my stuff like I was going to go downstairs. And I'm like, wait a second. Hit the snooze, laid back down, praised God. And then woke up at 6:30, came down. Made a cup of coffee. You wanted to know about my day, right? That's what you wanted, right? But here's the deal. We all have these set rhythms, right? And we all have these things. And so the sermon today is going to be an object lesson for you of just what you have inside of you. So I've titled this sermon, if you want to write this down, how many loaves do you have? How many loaves do you have? Because the reality is, when it comes down to it, you might be surprised what you have stored up inside of you. And there's going to be a demand someday. And it might even be today. It might be 4:30 in the morning on a Sunday morning, and there might be a demand suddenly placed on your life. And the reality is, you've got bread to give, folks. Yes. You've got bread to give, or at least you should, okay? That might be another sermon, all right? But you've got bread to give today, and so we're going to be ping-ponging slightly a little bit in Scripture. I want you to open to Matthew chapter 15, and there is a sister passage to this, and it's found in Matthew 14 as well, but we're going to be spending the chunk of our time today in Matthew 15. See, I'm about as anal retentive as they get. I love things to be organized and perfect and just so. And so for me being up here today without a sermon outline, without everything typed up just how I want to say it, without a PowerPoint presentation that I can click and keep you going, without any of that, I'm out of my comfort zone. Or am I? Right? Because the reality is a demand has been issued. And am I ready? And are you ready for when a demand is issued to you? How many loaves do you have? See, Kirk last week preached a message on contentment. And I hope you had a chance to listen to that either physically or to listen to it either virtually, I guess, online. If you haven't done that, go to www.cocfamily.com and click on the listen link and you can hear that sermon, okay? But I was thinking about his message as I was preparing this message, and we're going to be reading about the feeding of the 4,000, which is found in Matthew chapter 15, starting in verse 29. And the reality is this passage, it comes right after the feeding of the 5,000. They're two separate events. Matthew includes both of these events. The first feeding of the 5,000 is Matthew chapter 14. Feeding of the 4,000 is Matthew chapter 15. And the reason I wanted to tie back to Kirk's message on contentment. He was talking about how contentment isn't what we think it means, okay? Contentment isn't necessarily what we think it means. Contentment is what we when we think that all is right with the world. Either everything's done, right? Okay, everything's done for the day. I've got, for me, being a checklist person, I've got all my things crossed off. I love that feeling. I've got this memo book on my desk, and as I go through my day, I'm sliding, checking off things, drawing a nice line. There's something so satisfying about drawing a line through a task. Yeah. And I just love it. I just love it at the end of the day when I cross off that final task. I close my memo book, set it up, and make my journey home at the end of the day. And for me, sometimes that's a feeling of contentment. But the reality is that's not what true contentment is. See, true contentment is about finding contentment, even for me, in the midst of things not being done. In the face of things not being perfect. In the face of, oh dear, I've only given myself 30 minutes to write a sermon today, right? That's where true contentment lives. It lives in the face of that, right? True hope is hope that's found in the face of despair, right? True peace is peace that's only found in the midst of chaos. And true contentment is only true contentment when it's found in the face of things that don't make you feel contented, okay? And so we're going to be reading this passage about Jesus feeding 4,000 people. And here's the deal. Feeding other people can mess with your contentment. Preaching a sermon on short notice with little preparation can mess with my contentment. But here's the deal. Jesus wants to mess with the earthly sources of your contentment. Jesus wants to mess with the earthly sources of my contentment. That's the challenge. See, contentment can't be found in what we've stored up for ourselves. But that's how the world measures contentment. Was that good, babe? I'll say that again. Contentment can't be found in what we've stored up for ourselves, but guess where we go looking for contentment? In our stockpiles, in our storages. I'm looking at that wood pile right now. There's still a lot of winter to go right now. I just passed the halfway point of my wood pile right now, right? And it's messing with my contentment. I get an itchy chainsaw trigger finger right now. And I want to fire that baby up and go cut some wood. And in the midst of that, it's Jesus breathing into me saying, Stephen, don't worry, you got this. I've got this, right? You don't have to worry, right? And so contentment can't be found in what we've stored up for ourselves. True contentment comes from a place of trust in the face of lack. True contentment comes from a place of trust right in the face of lack. And that's why Paul, writing about the secret of contentment while he's in a prison cell, can challenge us to our core belief of what we think contentment is. Something that I want to share with you, and I would write this down if I were you, okay? This is a message for you. If you miss everything else that I say today, remember this. You'll have what it takes when you give what's been given. You'll have what it takes if you give what he has given you. And a lot of times when we're looking at our stockpile and our resources and moments notice, lack of preparation, lack of whatever, it's in those moments that we question ourselves, do I have what it takes? And the answer is yes, you do. When you give what he has given you. God is good, and he is faithful, and he's going to multiply what he's placed inside of you. How many loaves do you have? I'm going to read Matthew chapter 15. This is starting verse 29. Jesus left there and went along the Sea of Galilee, and then he went up on a mountainside, as he usually did, and sat down. And right in the middle of that, guess what those buggery people do, right? Okay. People love to mess with your contentment, folks, okay? Great crowds came to him, bringing the lame, the blind, the crippled, the mute, and many others, and laid them at his feet, and he healed them. The people were amazed when they saw the mute speaking, the crippled made well, the lame walking, and the blind seeing. And they praised the God of Israel. What you need to read between the lines here a little bit, when Jesus goes to this mountainside to pray, he still hasn't had a chance to mourn the death of John the Baptist. Because right after John the Baptist got beheaded and Jesus went up on a mountainside to be alone, the feeding of the 5,000 happened. And then it's after the feeding of the 5,000 that he ends up out walking out on the water to rescue the disciples who are freaking out because they're caught in the middle of the storm. Because guess what? He was also on his mountainside looking for some time alone, and he sees them going, and then he walks out on the water and rescues them, and right from there, he ends up in the land of Canaan and heals a woman there, and then right from there, he goes to a mountainside again, and here comes 4,000 people looking for something, right? And you say, well, that's Jesus. He can do that. Yes, it is Jesus. He can do that, but because he's Jesus, so can you, and so can I. And so here Jesus says, Jesus called his disciples to him and said, I have compassion. Isn't that great? I have compassion for these people. They've already been with me for 3 days and have nothing to eat. And I do not want to send them away hungry, or they may collapse on the way. Pay attention to two questions that are asked here. Ping and pong. Ping is in verse number 33. His disciples answered, where could we get enough bread in this remote place to feed such a crowd? Pause for just a second. Where can we find enough bread? What's interesting is just one short chapter ago was the feeding of the 5,000. Where'd that bread come from, boys? Yeah. Right? Where in the world did that bread come from, right? And I'm intrigued by that question because they just witnessed Jesus feeding the 5,000. And I wrote this as a note. How often do we do this, right? Not allowing one miracle to perpetuate our faith for the next, right? We think we've got this shortage of miracles, folks. I can only get about one from God. I better make sure I choose wisely, like it's some sort of wish that he keeps close to his vest and he only hands it out in our most dire moments, right? One miracle was meant to perpetuate thousands of miracles, which is why one loaf of bread was meant to feed thousands of people, right? One miracle is meant to perpetuate the other, but we do that. We don't allow one miracle to perpetuate faith for another. You know, is it that we don't want to bother God? We don't want to seem to be too needy? Or maybe perhaps, and I think that's where these guys are at, sometimes we're too focused on our own needs, our own supply of bread that we want to keep dear to our heart. And that's when Jesus is going to make a demand, because he doesn't want you to find contentment in your earthly sources anymore. He's going to draw you out of yourself, believe it or not. Pay attention to Jesus' question. Here's Pong. This is verse number 34. How many loaves do you have? Jesus asked. 7, they replied, and a few small fish. What do you notice about this versus the feeding of the 5,000? Anybody a numbers person here? More. They have more, Judy, right? They actually had more for this miracle with less people. They actually had more stored up with less people, and here they are questioning whether God, through them, can actually do it, right? But we do that. We do that because we're looking at our resources. We're looking at our supplies. In the feeding of the 5,000, where'd the bread and the fish come from? A little boy. In this miracle, where's the bread got to come from? The disciples. And wouldn't it just be crazy? It doesn't say this in Matthew, but ponder this thought for me. Wouldn't it be crazy if the bread that they have right now on hand is actually some leftovers from that miracle? And look at them wanting to hold it to their vest. Right? But we do that. I don't want to share that. It's not that big of a deal. That's not going to really bless anybody. Right? And we keep our miracles and our God moments to ourselves because we don't want to, I don't want to disturb anybody. Right? I don't really got anything to say. Bull. How many loaves do you have? 7, they replied, and a few small fish. So Jesus, doing what he does, he didn't say, oh, that's it? That's all? I suppose you guys want to eat that, right? Okay, I won't trouble you. Send the people away, right? No, he has compassion. He has compassion, and so he tells those buggery people, sit down on the ground. Then he took the 7 loaves and the fish, and when he had given thanks, he broke them. And then gave them back to the disciples, right? He takes what we have, likes to mess with it, hand it back to us, and go do something with it, right? Gave it to the disciples, and they in turn gave it to the people. I love verse 37. They all ate, even the disciples, even Jesus, and were satisfied. And afterward, the disciples picked up 7 basketfuls of broken pieces that were left over. The number of those who ate was 4,000, besides women and children. And after Jesus had sent the crowd away, he got back in the boat and went to the vicinity of Megiddon. Right? How many loaves do you have? Right? When Kirk's asking me to preach in a short notice, right, I'm not going to say no, right? I know he needs a break. And I always see this as an opportunity, inconvenience or not. This is an opportunity for God to invest something into me. And I wrote some notes for myself, right? I had a bunch of sermons ready, right? I've been doing some pulpit fills at some other churches. I could grab something from there and just stand up here and regurgitate a message that I've already done. It'd be okay. It'd be typed up. Might even be a PowerPoint for you. Might even be able to hold the remote and clickety click click. Okay? But the reality is that wasn't what God was calling me to in this moment, right? The question was for me, how many loaves do you have, Stephen? Man, I've got a notepad full of loaves. Full of loaves. I got a Bible full of loaves. I have, and this isn't bragging myself up, so if this sounds like bragging, slap me in the face later, okay? But I think I've got somewhere around 150 sermons that I've never preached before. Just sitting somewhere. How many loaves do you have? But you might not have 150 loaves, and that's okay, because maybe you've got 1, and Jesus wants to multiply it. Right? And that's what I see in this passage, right? I love Jesus' question. How many loaves do you have? And it's intriguing to me. They actually have more food. I'm so glad that Judy mentioned that for this miracle than the last one. And there's less people. And what if they were leftovers? What if they were leftovers from that miracle? You can understand why the disciples would want to keep that close. You could understand why the disciples would want to hold on to that. But hopefully you can also understand why Jesus is like, no, 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 no. Get rid of it. Get rid of it. Because bread held on to for too long, guess what happens to it? It gets moldy. It gets moldy. I didn't want to preach a moldy sermon today. Okay? So thankfully, Jesus is calling me out of my comfort zone. Again, this whole sermon is meant to be an object lesson, folks, okay? This is meant to be like, you have loaves inside of you. You could be up here holding this microphone, right? Wear a dark shirt so people don't see your armpits wet, okay? Keep your feet moving so they don't see your knees shaking, okay? But you've got loaves inside of you, right? And we'd love to think, right? Well, you know, the current method for seminary, I think, is like you go for a bachelor's degree for 4 years, and then you go to seminary for 2 years, and then a lot of times you add another couple of years. When Jesus sent out, here's a good trivia question for you. When did Jesus send out the 12 disciples to do their ministry? Immediately, Jerry. It's only in Matthew chapter 10. That's like right away. Like, I think Matthew gets called to be a disciple in like chapter 8 or something like that. And here Jesus is sending him out. We've been watching the Chosen series as a family on Thursday nights. And one of the episodes in season 3, don't mean to spoil it for you, is Jesus sending out the disciples. And when he drops that bomb on them, right? One thing that I love about The Chosen is it helps kind of give some of the context to what was going on in the situation. When Jesus sends them out, they're like, wait a second, what? Like, we're going to do stuff? Because they were so used to already, even in their short time with him, they were already so used to him doing the stuff that they never thought that they would be doing the stuff. They were super comfortable and super content with just being along for the ride. And some of us here have been super comfortable for super long with being content with being along for the ride. But you've got loaves inside of you. You've got loaves inside of you. You've got bread to give. And it's high time you start giving it. Because you'll have what it takes when you start to give what he has given you, right? It's significant that possibly this is from that previous miracle, or maybe it's not from the previous miracle. It might not be, but it's from their personal stash, right? I could quick YouTube a sermon and teach somebody else's sermon up here. You might not even know it, but I would. I would. And I've got bread to give. I've got bread that's been given to me to give to you. And so do you this morning. So do you this morning. Okay? I wrote this as kind of like maybe Jesus would have said this in the moment. Okay? So this is Stephen's writing. This isn't from the passage. This is Stephen writing, okay? Imagine Jesus saying this. When it comes to serving others, don't focus on what you don't have, right? That's a lot of times what we do. When it comes to serving others, a lot of times we focus on what we don't have. I don't know, I can't do this, I can't do that, right? Kirk just got done preaching a sermon on opportunity, desire. He was talking about being in the flow. Right, a lot of times, one of the, diversions, for lack of a better word, to our flow that we're meant to walk in is that idea that I don't have such and such to give, right? And so when it comes to serving others, don't focus on what you don't have, and rather focus on what you do have. And Jesus is going to say, give it to me. Let me break it up. Let me bless it, and I will multiply it to meet the need. Right? Focus on what you do have. Give it to me. Let me break it, because nobody likes things to be perfect, Stephen. Let me bless it, and then I will multiply it to meet the need. See, this passage reveals a lot to me about trusting God, right? And I love the beginning of this passage. I do not want to send them away hungry. And the reality is, a lot of times we send people away hungry when we have bread to give. And we do it because we are so focused on ourselves or what we don't have. Again, Jesus wants to mess with the earthly sources of your contentment. Contentment can't be found in what we've stored up for ourselves. True contentment comes from a place of trust in the face of lack. And you'll have what it takes if you're willing to give what he has given you. So here's the challenge then, because I got to be an object lesson for the day, right? Right? How many loaves do you have? Right? That's the question that I want you to be thinking this week. How many loaves do I have? What's been placed inside of me that is meant to be given to other people? What is Jesus drawing out of you? What's the demand that he's placed on you, right? Remember, when it comes to serving others, don't focus on what you don't have. Focus on what you do. Give it to Jesus. Let him break it up. Let him bless it and multiply it to all who need. Amen, you guys?